superhero from the hood. Iron Man stars got the good, not that good, good like Snoop. I bulletproof the coupe, polished up the suit and gather the troops. Got a brand new ray gun. Me and Doom headed down to the range to shoot in the matrix. Catch bullets with my hands and teeth, I break faces. Wild cop chases, dawn of all ages. I saved the world, that's fucking history pages. My Wu Crescent shines in the sky at night. Watch out, my eagle on my wrist, take off into flight. All my might, bright glass teeth that bright between a bird or a plane is gold.
Here we go again. The mood is scale. Better have my donuts to the left of me, my man. Bad News Ramen.
Where's Gregosa at, though?
Gregosa right in front of me.
But where is he?
Yeah, but he's right over here. He's got the briefcase.
Everything's lovely. Everything's lovely. You're gonna do it. You're gonna do a
do
crack.
Do you have the amount we agreed upon?
Don Rodriguez.
$20,000.
Dollars.
Yeah. So we had a miss last week. You know, there may have been a little bit of basketball happening. But we kind of bumped a couple days, and then...
And I had a rough week at work, yeah.
And then I think last week, when I wasn't feeling that good on Thursday, yeah. So
instead of the, I smell a rat, you decided to...
Yeah.
Which was music to my ears, because I was
you're ready to take a little
I was knocked down, dude.
Yeah, so...
I couldn't get back up, man.
It's all right, but we're here now.
Yeah.
And that's what matters.
There we go. I like that, dude.
Oh, yeah.
You're on all cylinders today, dude.
Firing, baby. So yeah, you know, so as it works
as it
out
be?
As it
what it
as
do
it were, as it were, we're here.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
We're here a couple of days. I don't even know. LT. Pass the ball.
You're rolling with the punches, dude.
Pass the ball.
I like it. What it do?
So, yeah, we're a couple days out from Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which, you know, I think we may get into. I got a few, like, kind of weird things that have been bouncing around in my mind regarding wrestling. So I don't know, like, if you have some, like, more overarching, anything that you want to start off with, I'm all open to it. Or we could go with a couple, weird things. I don't know.
To mark the test of time,
uh-huh.
I think it needs to be said, and we don't have to discuss this because I think it's pretty much well known already. Kevin Owens, Frog Splash is probably one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire life. Cesaro and The Miz and Sami Zayn, all four of those guys combined, have been putting on great matches. The other thing too, which I really like, and I kind of said it a little bit 2 weeks ago, but it's really come to fruition now, is that you have this main event that I actually want to see. Right? I mean, you have Roman Reigns. You have you know, this is the part of the show where I blank on names because, you know. I have to show and prove. No, AJ Styles. Gallows, Anderson and Gallows, who and actually Anderson did a great homage to Arn Anderson with his
spine buster.
So what I'm trying to say through all the general malaise that I'm laying out on this track right now, because I'm in the rap game. There's really, like, I mean, like, okay, so AJ Styles is like the supposed babyface and Roman Reigns is kind of this great character, but There isn't a face and a heel in this match, right? I mean, I think they've done a good job of, you have Dawkins and Gallows who are their heels, but they're aligned with AJ Styles. Roman Reigns is just a guy that nobody likes. The Usos have got away from kind of their whole tribal chant before they come out, because I like, you know, I look at the pageantry of everything, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Usos, those are guys with their current... state of affairs of what their character is. I can get with what they're doing, right? They're not trying to do something. Mm-hmm. They're just being who they are. And it's just, I don't know. It's like, it's just a good mixture right now, right? Like, I think you have a good world heavyweight title mixture. I think you have a great, intercontinental story developing. And then I even think, the tag team stuff is doing well as well. So, this is probably one of the first kind of pay-per-views where I think the three main titles actually mean something, and all the right pieces are in place to, you know, I care about every feud without even like really caring about it, but it's entertaining, right? So I'm I'm sitting there going like, I'm like Al Pacino in Heat, right? I'm over fucking whelmed. I'm like, I'm cussing on a podcast right now, you know?
You accidentally omitted Jericho and Ambrose because I'm sure you care a ton about that.
I don't.
Right.
But the whole thing is like, okay, look, I've said from the beginning, right? It's like, and I even said this about Ambrose, like, with his feud with Brock Lesnar, I was like, you know, put them in Hell in a Cell, right? So they're doing a Hell in a Cell, and I know Jericho does good business in Hell in a Cell. Jericho has done great gimmick matches. You know, he knows how to do a gimmick match, and their match was kind of flat, but you add Hell in a Cell, and it works, right? Like, I'm going to watch a Hell in a Cell. So, yeah, you know, it's not. I'm not sitting there going like, I can't wait to see that match. But it's not going to be a match where I'm going like, okay, you know, this is filler match before the big matches I want to see. I think it's going to be a good match. And it's not so much Jericho. It's more Ambrose, you know? Like, I'm not a big fan of Ambrose right now. But I think Jericho can bring out the best in him because I have to respect Jericho's track record. But for the most part, it's, you know, you're looking at this pay-per-view, and it's like, it's a solid pay-per-view.
So I guess I'll start off with the main event then. You know, I think...
Is this the crazy thoughts that you had when...
No.
Okay.
I think that they've done a very good job building this whole feud. And I think that...
This is the World Heavyweight.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, even in extension, not just the feud between AJ and Roman, but like you were saying, bringing in Guns and Gallows and bringing in the Usos. I think it's been by far the best feud that WWE's put on in probably at least a year.
Without even trying to do it.
Right. And I think that's the thing.
No. Without even trying to do it, right?
Oh, without even trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's
it
no
kinda like just evolved.
You feel yeah, like there's no like you it know, it's feel, not forced.
It didn't feel forced, right?
Exactly.
And yeah, because even like when AJ coming out of Mania got the number one contendership, like it didn't feel forced, but you're kind of like, okay, you know, what direction is this going to head in? And then I think there was that whole dynamic of, you know, you got tons of crowd support for AJ, and it's pretty lukewarm for the support with Roman, and how's that going to play itself out? Is there going to be heel turns, this and that? And just the way the story's developed, I think it's been really good. And they haven't had...
Because there hasn't been a heel turn, right?
Maybe. I mean, I still think that could be good, but I don't think you have to have it. If it happens, then fine, but like...
But I don't think it needs to happen.
Right, it doesn't... Yeah. It doesn't. There was a point where... When it started, felt like that a heel turn had to happen.
But they're calling the spade a spade.
And the way the story is developed, they made it so that whether it does or doesn't, it's still good.
I think they're above a heel turn or a face turn, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
They've
done a good job of keeping both of them gray, which is something like McMahon generally never likes to do. And they've stuck with it, and the story has worked. And I think probably a lot of it has to do with you can get away with those two guys being kind of gray when you have like the Usos who are like, the white meat baby face of all tag teams, and you have Gallows and Guns who, you know, have this heel reputation. So like they're your anchors in like what's baby face and what's heel, and it allows those other twos to work gray and it doesn't matter.
But on top of that, what you're dealing with, so you have, you know, you talk about the Usos being the baby face and Doc and Gallows being the heels, but crowd support is with Doc and Gallows, mm-hmm. and the kind of the hatred is towards the Usos, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's a good like kind of just like balance of everything, right? Like it's ironic, yeah. You know.
And it was been one of the odd things to me, and it's more like just on the, you know, the internet followers and people that, you know, I follow or that I look at and stuff, and it's gotten to a point where they're kind of poking fun at, oh, this match again. I'm like, yeah, it's been good every time.
Yeah,
it's like when they keep doing the tag matches or the six man, whatever it is. Like every match that they've had has been a good match. So I don't know, like if they're just trying to be like, you know, online sarcasm, or they actually like the matches have been good. So I don't see any reason to complain. Roman Reigns been good in the matches. AJ's done well. I think that what you said is true of the Usos. Like they've had a slight character change. I really think that they should do like a real like full on reinvention of who they are character wise. Like Roman too. Like I think at the like cosmetic level, like he needs to stop wearing that vest. I mean, it's not affecting my enjoyment of what's
going
on.
You
want to
see his bare chest.
I do, for the ladies. No, I just think it just doesn't make sense to me, right? And I think that suit worked when they were in the Shield, but it's well past time to do something different. And I think the Usos I think it's better for them to take on this more like serious character. And I think they don't need like they don't need the face paint. They don't need to do all of that stuff now. Like let them go on. If you're gonna go forward with them being like the bloodline or the family or whatever it's gonna be, let them kind of like find some kind of like a new beginning for them to all start with going forward on this.
So I have a question for you because right now this heavyweight picture is working because of all the elements involved, but you're still bringing up and I'm not faulting you for this. But you're still bringing up like kind of like old kind of archetypes in terms of where characters are going to go. Like, and the reason why I say this is because, you know, you bring up the face paint with the Usos, you bring up the cosmetic look of Roman Reigns. It's working right now. I mean, why do you feel? And you're even talking like, you know, in terms of like where the characters of the Usos is going to go. And I think you're looking long term. You know, like in terms of like what's the end game going to be? Where I'm kind of going like, well, I don't care about the end game because what's working right now because. Us as wrestling fans, we always see the end game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like we always know what the end game is. Like part of I think the allure of pro wrestling for us as 12 or 13 year old kids is like making predictions, like saying like, "Oh, this is going to happen," and then it comes true because it was so formulaic. Well, this is a time in wrestling, and it's happened before. It happened with the Attitude Era. I think it happened with the CM Punk era, and I think CM Punk gets an era by himself. But even like the CM Punk era, you knew what was going to happen. What I'm saying right now is like, I don't know what's going to happen with this Roman Reigns AJ Styles match. And I don't care about the old archetypes in terms of like, well, the Usos are a little bit different. Roman Reigns needs to do this. Why are you so concerned of what Roman Reigns needs to do? It's like, or the Usos need to do, because it's working right now. I mean, at the present, it's working right now.
No, it's working right now. I'm not saying they need to do it like tomorrow, but I think. And I kind of preface by saying, depending on what they're going to do with this, if they're going to take this as like this thing going forward, this bloodline, if that's going to be like,
so you even bring up that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as like some type of faction, right?
Right.
I mean,
well, that's the way they're kind of presenting it now, yeah. Right? And that's kind of what I'm saying. I think all three of those guys have been overdue for some kind of tweak, not like a total like I don't want them to really change what Roman Reigns is doing at all. Just, I think that it's time for him to, I think just like something as simple as changing up his gear, which I was saying even before when what he was doing wasn't working, that was something that should have been done. But yeah, if now would be a good time, like not now, but like you got him. I think Usos, we've been saying for a while, they need to change something. And like their demeanor is one thing. They're changing their demeanor, which is good. But I think if you're really making a faction out of this and you're going to go forward, that they should take that and I think for Roman, the attitude that he's got right now, the way he approaches his promos and his matches, everything's good. I wouldn't change any of that. But I think then you're bringing in like he's bringing in his cousins to basically watch his back. I think not they don't need to be like Roman clones, but they need to be their character needs to get a little bit more serious for what this feud is, I think. So they don't need to be a gimmick right now. They can just be like tough guys like Roman Reigns is, and they can still put on the match that they put on. I don't think anyone's ever had a problem with the match they put on, but like I feel like they're like this. Their character's evolving into something that's a little more serious, but their gimmick is still kind of campy, which is fine right now. But I think in the long term, like you said, if you're going forward with it, I think that they should do something a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm looking at this storyline right now, and I'm not looking at the future. Right. You know, and I'm not.
I have no. I like the storyline. I'm not. It's not affecting my enjoyment of what the storyline is in any way. That's why for what's going on now, I think this is good. I'm just saying that if that extends past this feud and that stays as some kind of team, then I think that's something that they should probably look into. And I'm just, I don't think I'm just, for me, it's like I'm readdressing this, right? These are all things that I think we've been talking about for at least 6 months. With Roman Reigns, like,
well,
a few months.
I'm not attacking you.
Right. No, I'm just explaining. Like, yeah. This is not like, I'm not trying to come out here and say, now that things are going well, now let's just change everything. I think I've been saying this, but I think now it just even makes more sense that sometime in the near future, that maybe they go into something slightly different look wise, but I think the Usos have done a good job of changing their persona to be something more serious for what this feud that they're involved in.
What this feud has done is that, okay, so I like Roman Reigns, but I wasn't ready to put my lot in with him, right? I like the Usos, but I thought the Usos, you know, they had this whole kind of like injury gimmick, and that's why they had outs of why they weren't winning and stuff. Mm-hmm. This is like the first time, especially within Roman Reigns, when he got the push, at the, you know, close to like a year and a half to 2 years ago, where I don't care how the fans react to him. It's like, it's getting to the point now where it's like, I mean, I'm watching SmackDown tonight, and Usos come out, they're not trying to get cheers. Roman Reigns comes out, you know, I don't care if they boo or not. It's like these three guys, I wouldn't say they're badasses, but they are badasses, right? Like, they don't care, right? And Roman Reigns no longer cares. He doesn't have to play a role. So what this feud has done is that with me not having to put any belief or like this is what I want for Roman Reigns, like me rooting for Roman Reigns, right? Like, I don't root for him anymore, and that makes him a whole lot more effective than when I was like, well, why are they booing him, right? It's like Roman Reigns, you know, he deserves to try out his shot as heavyweight champion, and the people should give him, you know, walk in with open eyes and not prejudge him. Like the whole boos that they do on Twitter, the whole boos that they do in the arenas, it's not warranted, right? It's like, it's just like easy to boo this guy. All the problems that I have with Roman Reigns is out. There's no problems I have with Roman Reigns anymore, right? It's like, I don't care how fans react to him. I don't care how fans react to Usos, and that it's finally fun, right? It's like I can just like it's like I'm watching these three guys come out, then I'm watching Doc and Gallows, then I'm watching AJ Styles, and I'm watching Doc and Gallows going like, man, it's like watching New Japan. Mm-hmm. Right, and the whole thing is like there's no story. Like, you have to cheer for these guys, you have to boo for these guys. That's why I think what I liked about New Japan so much, because it reminded me a lot of NWA when NWA was on TBS, the mothership on the Superstation, you know, where okay, the bad guys, you know, these guys were bad, but people still liked them. Mm-hmm. And we saw two people, you know, Two grown men get inside of the ring and come together and
get it on like two men are supposed to do.
But you know, so that's like the kind of like the whole thing is like there's no storyline. I mean, there's a storyline, but the typical storyline of whether I should boo or whether the fans should boo, that's taken out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about it. And so it's kind of funny to me to hear you say like, well, you know, I think these guys' directions should be this or should be that, when it's like, just enjoy the ride, right? And it's like, I don't care what the long term is because the now is so good. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, to tell you the truth, like, I think wrestling has been such over the past, since I got back into it, since I got back into the game of watching pro wrestling, it's been such, everything's been a long term end goal, right?
Right.
And when I'm watching the Attitude Era, when I'm watching WCW at its height, there is no long-term goal. It's like, what's going on now? How can you entertain me tonight? You know, like, okay, I'm on this station. Why are you going to make me change the channel? And I think wrestling, when I stopped kind of watching wrestling, was when the WWE won. It's like, okay, like, you know what? It's The Undertaker's time now. Okay, now it's Stone Cold's time now. Okay, now it's The Rock's time now. Okay, now it's Chris Jericho's time now. That's when I started getting written, because it became so formulaic. I don't know what the hell's going on right now. I don't know what's going to happen with the Intercontinental title. I don't know what's going to happen with New Day. I don't know what's going to happen with Roman Reigns and AJ Styles. And that's what's good about it. And it's kind of funny that people, you know, on the Twitterverse are going like, oh, it's another match. It's like, yeah, but you don't know what the hell's going to happen. Nobody knows what's going to happen. There is no John Cena where, you know, in the long term, the end game, John Cena is going to, you know, is going to be protected. Right now with Roman Reigns, I don't know what's going to happen with Roman Reigns. I don't know if he's going to be the champion for the next year. I don't care, because that feud is so good right now. It's taken all the old kind of adages of what pro wrestling is supposed to be. It's like, it's Roman Reigns' time now, right? I don't know whose time it is anymore. And the whole thing is that if AJ Styles wins the title and it's his time, I know they're going to put him in another storyline, maybe with Finn Balor down the line or whatever it is. But I don't know what the heck's going on. And I don't know whose time it is. And that's a good thing.
It's Vader time.
I wish.
I think that's true. There is a lot of unpredictability with most of the matches that are going on, and this one, yeah, like, there's a lot to that, because AJ Styles very well could win this match, and you know, and they, it's not just that he could, But they also have, like we've been talking about, this whole dynamic with the Usos and the club. They could get involved, and it could be like a screwy finish or something like that. And anything that any way it goes like that is going to be fine. And I like that because when you got, it's like you got the right guys in the right positions to that. Either outcome is going to be good, as opposed to say like the main event at WrestleMania where you knew like either outcome was going to be bad, no matter. I mean,
yeah, and you want to swerve at the end. Right. And this match coming up now, it's like you don't need a swerve. It's like whatever happens, happens.
If you get a swerve, then fine.
Even better. Yeah.
But like, yeah. And
you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Right. Well, that was the thing. When there was no swerve in the Triple H Roman match, then it was a nothing match. So they haven't painted themselves in any corners. They're leaving themselves a bunch of options and a bunch of outs. And I think that's good.
I just can't believe that I started singing Pure Blend Harmony. And you didn't chime in, did you?
Oh, that was that was some nice and smooth that I missed on.
There you go. Yeah, you know everything.
I forgot the next line too.
But you can't have your cake and eat it too, girl. Yeah, I something about something I have to choose, something like that. All I know is that I'm Greg Nice and I am MC Smooth B.
Just in case you see what went wrong.
No, together no, we're.
I know what the next line is. I wasn't just going to sing the whole thing, man.
Well, I started you off, dude. You know, you used to be the joker of the group. Now you're all serious, dude. You're all like locked into pro wrestling right now.
Country's at war. Little kids crying rape. Some lion dying, crying, pulling on my cape.
Wait. Massive meltdown. Bring the red tape. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
New LP. Got to make tapes, get the album, ka-single, CD and tapes, ka-single.
Hey, big red booty.
There's a relic. Stylin', profiling, smiling, buck wildin' as the dough keeps on piling.
Red bone booties I like to tax. Stick up kids is out there. Whatever.
Yes. All right.
Okay, so what were some of these crazy
before I get into those, then I want to wrap up with the rest of you were saying about the undercard. I think... Like, without going match by match, I think what is shown here is that the WWE is, like, invested a little bit of time in developing storylines with their undercard guys. And I think what you're saying is correct about that Intercontinental Championship. And I think just also what you're saying here, like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, I was watching a little bit of SmackDown before I came over here, and Logan's getting into wrestling, right? And so Logan asked me, who's going to win this match? And then I legitimately, I don't know, was my response, which is rare. You know, usually you can always tell where the match is going to go. And I look at those four guys, and I mean, realistically, you know, I would kind of think it's going to Sami Zayn, but I don't have any confidence in that pick, and I could see it going, I could even see Miz retaining. I think that's the least likely thing, but I could see it, and I don't think it would be a bad thing.
Exactly.
So I think that you got that. And then the tag division has been really good, even though you know, suffering the Enzo injury, you still.
That's one of
the things I want to get into. But just in terms of wrapping up this part of it, you know, they've been able to still put together a very good storyline with the teams that they have, and then finally with the Jericho and Ambrose thing, it kind of goes back to what I kind of was saying a couple of weeks ago. As I'm surprised that you're kind of looking forward to it. As much as you are, but I think that...
Which isn't saying that much, but I'm still looking forward to it.
Right. But I think going back to what I was saying a couple of weeks ago, like, the fact that Jericho beat AJ Styles at WrestleMania at least gave this match enough legitimacy, or this feud enough legitimacy to build up to having a match like this. Unfortunately, that one I think is predictable, and I think Ambrose is going to win. I think Ambrose has to win because he's been losing all his other feuds. But I think that's kind of what you get. Like, you built up Jericho so that Dean Ambrose beating him could at least mean something. So
the one thing, the one match you didn't bring up is Natalya and Charlotte too. I mean, I think that's going to be a pretty decent match. I mean, it'll kind of be funny because Natalya is part of the old guard and Charlotte's kind of the new. But all I gotta say is, like, what did you think of the black leather suit that Charlotte wore?
Charlotte or Charlotte?
Well, both of them, but I mean, but all I gotta say is that I'm not talking about certain upper parts, but Charlotte was looking, she was looking pretty good in that black suit, dude. Is that my Julia Styles coming through?
Or? I don't know what that is. I mean, I think Natalya's been looking good in whatever patent leather or
whatever. I have no problem.
Yeah, I'll say that. I still like.
It's her disposition.
No,
you don't see what I see.
Yeah, I know what I
see. You're the one wearing glasses.
I know what I see. I see a female version of Ric Flair every time I look at her. So I don't know. I will. That's your Julia Stiles over there. You can have that one.
Look at her disposition. You're the one wearing glasses. So I'm all about the music today, dude. And you're just like I'm throwing you hanging.
There's nothing I can say on that. That's a intro for Old Dirty. Dirty.
You can at least crumple up the paper, dude.
That wasn't even the same. That wasn't even the same promo.
Doesn't matter, dude. All right, there we go. There it is, dude. I knew the girl for 10 seconds of my life, but the pussy was good. It was good.
Bitch broke me again with gonorrhea. So it wasn't like I got burnt once. It's like I got burnt two times. If you really look at it.
All right. Before I start singing about the first time, the
go ahead,
first
Dan. Time. Okay. Well, I think yeah. So one of the things that I was gonna that was bouncing around here, and it seemed like you want to get into it. So we'll start with that. Was Big Cass, right?
I'm worried.
You're worried?
Yeah.
Why is that? Oh, you're worried that tag team is never going to happen now?
Yeah, I kind of am.
Because Kaz is taking off too much?
Well, I think he's the prototypical wrestler that Vince McMahon likes. And I'm not saying that he's great, but he's serviceable. And he's probably one of the best, like, new big mans they have. But I think, you need Enzo, dude. I mean, Enzo, you know, I think... Enzo being gone and the position that they're putting in Kaz, which is not to fail, I think there's a problem with that in terms of if you're a big Enzo fan.
I don't think so because I don't see Kaz. I think Kaz is still pretty green, and and I was trying to figure out who botched that finish between him and Bubba.
I almost feel that
Bubba may have.
Nah, Kaz wasn't strong enough to
I think part of it was that Kaz wasn't strong enough, but I think that Bubba also... I don't think he... And I'm,
was he stiff?
I he didn't stiff him at all. I just think he didn't swing his legs the right direction to make the move work. Please, Bubba, if somehow this makes it to you, I'm not disrespecting you, man. Yeah, I know you'll come after people on Twitter.
Because he's one of our 15 listeners.
No, I don't... But if it comes out like some podcast slam Bubba, and then he has to come after me. I'm not. Yeah, you're the man, Bubba. I'm just thinking.
That's not going to happen, dude.
Okay.
I just want
to put it out there.
13 to 15 listeners,
man,
you know.
I just want to put that out there ahead of time that I love Bubba, and there's no disrespect because I don't want him bringing the thunder of the Twitterverse after me if on some slight chance it happens. But yeah, I think like he's doing well, but I don't see like. In the short term, that there's going to be any like big title push for Kaz, so I think that in the time being he keeps winning matches, and then Enzo comes back, and I think there may be even more momentum because I think Enzo was the known quantity once that tag team came to the main roster. I think you knew what you were going to get out of Enzo, and Kaz was kind of he was the variable, right? Is this guy going to just be some guy that spells out S-A-W-F-T and brings, like, power to the matches but is nothing without Kaz? He's showing that he can stand on his own, so...
Nothing without Enzo.
I don't think he's nothing without... I think no, he's something.
You said nothing without Kaz.
Right. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Yes. But I think he's shown a dimension that I didn't know he had. And
well, see, I disagree with that because the first time that I saw Enzo and Kaz, like in NXT... I kind of felt the same way, but then I started doing my homework. And Kaz is Kaz is a serviceable talker, right? I mean, he's probably a step above Roman Reigns, which isn't saying a lot. But, he can talk. It's just kind of a thing of what I'm kind of saying it facetiously. I'm not worried because I know Enzo, you give Enzo the mic and he's the best guy on the mic. But I think it's easier for them, for WWE in the long term. To look at Kaz as a guy like, okay, this is a guy we want to push because Enzo's not here around and he's still getting over. I just, here's the thing is like, when the only person that can say, you know, he's a bona fide G and, you know, trash talker Skywalker and you can't teach that. And here's Big Cass, he's 7 feet tall and you can't teach that. The only guy that can do that is Enzo. I'm like, I don't like looking at the crowd when they do that because it just looks stupid when they do it. I don't like looking at Stephanie McMahon doing it because it just doesn't work. Enzo is the only guy that can do that. And I think the SAWFT is getting really played out because right. there's no meat in, before it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like because Enzo can cut a killer-ass promo, which he has been doing. And he's recycling a lot of the stuff they've done in NXT, but it's fresh, right? And all that, you know, Enzo is the main guy that can hit that. And then you can have the SAWFT at the end. You can't have the SWAFT, you know, to on start itself. With. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think what you're seeing here, in some ways, it reminds me a little bit of Edge and Christian. Just in that, like, when that team started, like, I think you knew Edge was a star, right? And Edge carried a lot of the promos early on. And, like, Christian, there was a time where it's like, okay, Christian plays off him really well, but it took a while before you realized that Christian could really do this on his own, right? And I don't think you've had a tag team like that in a long time where you had two guys that could really talk. And I don't think you were ever going to get that without the end. I'm not saying that the Enzo injury is a good thing, but I don't think that you get the development of Kaz, like, unless that happens to Enzo. So I think it opens it up when Enzo comes back. You could have like a really dynamic, like two guys like on the mic, really good as a tag team. Something like they can be serious, but they can kind of clown too, kind of like what you had Edge and Christian doing in the past. So I think that there's a lot of potential there, and there's a lot of good development for Kaz. But I think ultimately that team's going to have to stay together for a while because I don't think. I just think the only, again, looking down the road, the only realistic future I see with Kaz as a solo, if they try to hotshot him right now, is he keeps doing what he's doing, then Enzo comes back, then somehow he becomes a heel, and they build him up, and then he gets squashed by John Cena, and you don't hear from him again. So I'd say let that tag team develop.
Let me cut you off right there because I see Enzo if he goes solo. I see Kaz if he goes solo. I see that he'll get more backing from the company. Can Enzo be a solo star? And the whole thing is like I don't want them to break up because mm-hmm. I think they're one of the freshest things to happen in a long time. But I see more of a future with Kaz as a solo guy than Enzo.
I think the.
Which during NXT I would have never said because I knew Enzo was a star and I think Enzo is a star now, but this is the main roster and this is like, you know, Vince McMahon still has his paper idol that's the big man that he's always looking for, and I think it's easier for Kaz to be successful than Enzo is.
There's some truth to that. I think the variable the thing that you don't know is what is WWE long term plan with this. Global Cruiserweight tournament, and are they going to turn it into a standing Cruiserweight championship again? Because I think that Enzo could kill as like a Cruiserweight champion.
Just on the mic, though, because I mean, right, but the guys he's going to face are way better than he is.
Yeah, but possibly, but I think they're guys that he can beat, and
he'd be like the Rock of the Cruiserweights, right? Because there's a lot of criticism. I mean, he's not going to be The Rock, but I mean, there's a lot of criticisms right. in terms of Rock's matches. And I thought Rock's matches were fine. They weren't great, but I mean, he was fun to watch as a wrestler.
Yeah, I think that, but having a guy that can talk that well down there is going to, and even if it's like a better kind of Miz role, right? Because Miz, like, survived a lot, you know, for talking, and he wasn't even that good at it. It was just, he was so hateable. But now you get a guy that can actually talk. And now if you're going to try to emphasize that division for him at his size, that's something he can compete at, right? Because the thing that usually is Enzo's deal is he's hot, he's doing all this stuff in the match, but ultimately some guys that have like 30 pounds on him end up beating him down, and then Kaz would come in and kind of like balance the scales, and then Enzo would get a pin, right? So I think that if you now start putting him in there with guys that are 220 and below, right in his wheelhouse, you know, he can be a legitimate force in that kind of division. And a guy that had the personality to whether he's the champion. Like, he's the kind of guy that if they wanted to do, like, you go, like, you need a heel cruiserweight that can cut a bunch of promos and get heat. And then all the guys, all the other guys, even if you may be that they are better in-ring performers, they have to chase him, right? So I think something like that could work. And if that works at a cruiserweight level, maybe, you know, he builds himself up to something more than that. But I don't know. I think that... I mean, we agree that team needs to stay together. But I think Kaz is doing a very good job right now. But so that, and then kind of also bringing in what we talked about a couple of weeks back, the Vaudevillains, right? So between Kaz and the Vaudevillains right now is like three guys that have come up from NXT very recently. And I think I wasn't very high on the Vaudevillains in developmental, and I thought Kaz was okay. But I think both or all three of those guys have been way better on the main roster than what they were in NXT. So I wanted to ask you, like, what does that say, right? Like, is there anything to be like learned from that? Because I would think that in general, I think I got a pretty decent eye of who's good and stuff like that. So, and like Ascension, I knew they were gonna suck, right? And I knew in my mind Vaudevillains wasn't gonna work, but it does. And Kaz, I thought, was definitely attached at the hip to Enzo, and I wouldn't have thought that Kaz would have been able to have any kind of success as a singles guy this early, maybe down the road, whatever. But for the fact that they're able to bring those guys into the story and make them major players like immediately, what does that say about WWE or about their creative?
Or maybe you, because he sucks at not
interesting. Or about me? Am I looking at things wrong?
No, I don't think you're looking at things wrong. I think here's the thing with Kaz, and we already said it, is that Kaz is a big big kind of giant.
He's a big guy.
He's a big guy, hey Judge. Look at my pinky, Judge. I'm going to be deformed for life. But you know, Kaz fits the prototype of what they want. I mean, that is a WWE prototype, right? I mean, like, he's Test, but way better and have 100 times more charisma than Test would ever be. And the whole thing is like, Test, when he first, so you didn't know, but when Test, there goes my phone. But when Test first came into the WWE, you know, he got a push because he was this tall guy, and you know, we're supposed to care about this guy named Test.
I didn't think Test was terrible.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to talk about Test.
Right, go ahead.
But so I mean, he fits the archetype of what the WWE is looking for. They're always going to look for the next like big tall guy that has some semblance of talent in the ring, and I think you know, I know you watched a lot of NXT, and it was kind of funny because like Enzo and Kaz weren't really the guys that you would watch NXT for. Like they were like the guys in the beginning, and then you had like the big names at the end, right? He had like your Sami Zayns, you had your
I was watching, part of why I was watching was for the Enzo entrance.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It was kind of like, you know,
it wasn't for their in-ring
ability. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you watch it for the entrance, and then, you know, and that's kind of the same thing now, right? It's like you want to hear Enzo talk trash. But I think Enzo is so overpowering as a personality that Kaz does good work on the mic, too. Especially, he works really well with Enzo, but it gets overlooked because, you know, Enzo has all the sayings, right? I mean, he's a great talker, and I think Kaz is a decent talker. But he gets overlooked because Enzo's so good. So I think there's that. I think you have a case of that. Enzo's an overpowering personality. Kaz was doing good work on the mic, and he fits the archetype of what the WWE wants. So I think that's why he's taken off. The Vaudevillains, you know, you brought up The Miz. The Vaudevillains, great technical wrestlers, don't have good looks to them. I mean, they're kind of dorks, right? They're nerds, right? Like
I believe they are hipsters.
But the whole thing is like you're not gonna, you know, these guys come out, you're not gonna take them seriously,
right?
You know, because they're not overpowering, you know, they don't have the look. They have like a dorky look to them, and that's what makes them work. They stuck them with the dorky gimmick, and the guys are good workers, right? I mean, they are technically sound, right? Like they put on, I'm not saying they put on great matches, but whoever they're gonna face, they're good foils for whoever they're going to face. They're good. They're good mechanics in the ring. So when they do win against a team that you think they shouldn't win against, you're not going to like them. And you know, I like the Von villains, right? I like their entrance. I think both of them like suck, and that's what makes them so good. I mean, you know what I'm saying? That they're good wrestlers, but they suck, right? It's like there's no reason why I should like these guys. And then they do like the, you know, they'll cut like their promo, which they don't cut bad promos, but they cut their promo. It's a promo that I'm not going to like because they're dorks. And then they do that pose at the end, and it's so bad that it's good, right? Like that pose is so bad, but it's good. It's like I'm sitting here waiting for that pose. I'm like, there it is, dude. So they're good at getting, you know, they get cheap heat, they get bad heat, they have vaudeville villains heat, right? It's like Vicky Guerrero heat. That's what they have, and that's what makes them so good.
I don't think they're that bad, though.
I don't think they're bad.
So I can't be...
Because they can back it up in the
but
ring.
But it can't be Vicky Guerrero heat, because...
It's X-Pac heat.
Okay, it could be X-Pac heat.
It is X-Pac. Right, that's X-Pac what it is. Yeah.
All right, fair enough. All right, so I'm going to ask one more question in this general vicinity, and I hadn't thought about this, but just in this discussion, you talking about how Kaz is the prototype of what the WWE is looking for by bringing in, like, a guy that's got good size,
with 7 feet tall,
a look, 6'9",
yes,
with some athletic ability. So, just because both of these call ups happen so quickly, like how would you compare Baron Corbin with Big Kaz? And like, do you see like maybe just because of the injury to Enzo, they look at like Big Kaz and say, you know, everything that we thought we wanted to do with Corbin, if that doesn't work out, we got Kaz right here, and we can slide him right into that slot. Because I think that there's a lot of things, you know, I know you like Corbin, and I think there's some good things to him, but ultimately I think he's pretty bad on the mic, and I think that's going to limit him. And so could they scrap those plans and say Kaz is the guy because that guy can actually talk on the mic?
I don't want them to. Here's the difference between Corbin and Kaz is that Kaz doesn't need to have a good opponent to make him look good. I think Kaz has a natural charisma. I think it was enhanced by Enzo. Corbin, you need to put with a Dolph Ziggler. Here's the thing: when Corbin came out into the main roster, the announcers were trying so hard to bump this guy up. You know, it's like, oh, he's this, he's that, he's this. They put him against Dolph Ziggler. They put him against, you know, they put him against like top mid card guys. You know, Kaz, it doesn't matter who he comes out with, right? Like, he comes out with the Dudley Boys. You know, the Dudley Boys, you know, great workers, right? But they're not over like they used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, you can put Kaz against any opponent, and he is going... I'm not going to say he's going to shine, but you're going to watch him. And even when I'm watching a Kaz match, I know he's green. Mm-hmm. I know he's a green guy. But since I like Enzo so much, right? And you know, seeing him with Enzo and knowing the history with him and Enzo and just kind of... catching on with his character. And that's like the other thing too, right? It's like I know who Kaz is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he he's this New Jersey guy. He, you know, instead of saying throw, he says tro, you know, and he makes it work. Corbin, you don't know who the hell Corbin is, right? Like, Corbin's supposed to be this badass, and he's kind of like, I don't know if he's like the second coming of like Undertaker or Kane to a lit, like he's like Kane, you know, 1.0, because he doesn't have that edge. I don't know who he is. I mean, you know, he's kind of like this whole thing with the, you know, you could probably say he's like the poor man's Wyatt family, right? And that's like the other funny thing too, is like, where's the Wyatt family? You don't know, they haven't been on TV for the past like month, and it's been fine. So I know who Kaz is. I don't know who Corbin is. Corbin is kind of like, you know, he's going to be like a, you know, he's a poor man someone, right? And for me, it's like I like looking at guys that, you know, maybe have something, and if they take off, and then I can take credit, go like, well, I like Corbin way back when. Mm-hmm. I don't think Corbin's going to be that, right? I think Corbin has something, but the product has changed, and the product has changed. It's a different landscape that it is now. It's like, you know, a year ago the Wyatt family was great. I don't know if the Wyatt family, if they come out now, whether they get as over as they do right now, because you have great workers in Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn. You know, Kaz, Enzo, great guys on the mic. the mic guys are really starting to take off. And then you have a guy like Kevin Owens who can cut a good promo. Everybody that's taking off right now cuts a good promo. The only person that doesn't like cut a great promo is AJ Styles. But since you have Doc and Gallows to back him up, Roman Reigns doesn't cut a great promo, but he has his cousins to back him up, and you have these two guys clash, that works. The landscape's different now. Corbin needs to do something, and I don't know what their long-term plans with Corbin was, but I don't think Kaz is going to step into Corbin's role. I think it's right now they're going like, okay, you know, Kaz is making Dudley Boys relevant. They're making, you know, New Day, you know, is still fresh, right? So, like, we can take all of these guys that have a ton of charisma, and they can rub each other like two men are supposed to do, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I don't know if it's a good comparison, but that's the difference between Corbin and Kaz, if I answered your question.
You think Corbin's going to be okay? Do you think that, like, they're going to be able to continue this guy on whatever path that he's on and it's going to work? Or do you think there's going to be some pushback?
I think it's going to be okay, because I think when John Cena comes back, instead of John Cena adapting to what the WWE is right now, which is the best that it's been in a long time, they're going to have to stroke John Cena's ego. So as long as you have guys that are going to stroke John Cena's ego, there's a place for Baron Corbin in the WWE.
So you see his future as just jobbing out to Cena?
No. What I'm saying is that they are going, you know, I think Corbin right now is a forced character. I think he's a forced personality. And what I'm saying is that John Cena is a forced personality. And as long as they're going to keep on having John Cena be the benchmark of their company, then they're going to have... I'm not saying that Corbin's going to be fodder for John Cena. What I'm saying is that if you have that mentality, if you cannot see that your product is better today than what it was with John Cena in it, and then you're going to have John Cena come back, and you're going to go back, and you're not going to go back to the drawing board, you're going to go back to the way the old things were, you're going to get the band back together. If you're going to get the band back together, if John Cena is the crappy lead singer, Baron Corbin is a crappy bass player. And so there will be a place for Baron Corbin at WWE.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. All right. So this is one of this one's a little bit out there, but yeah, I've been watching a lot of, you know, I've been watching for a while now, and in the recent like year or two, I've seen something that it's bothering me. One time it can be an isolated incident. Two times can be a trend.
You're talking about the catapult into the turnbuckles?
Along those lines.
Okay.
But three times now, I think we have an epidemic on our hands.
Fool me once, shame on you.
So what the hell is going on?
Whoa.
With all these tag teams? With this fucking with these goddamn leg sweep finish and someone flying in on top, right? So first the alleged like next generation demolition in the Ascension comes through with the leg sweep and what is it? Is it the European uppercut?
I don't even know.
Okay, and then the Vaudevillains come in with the, I guess it's not exactly a leg sweep, but I put it in the same category as a European uppercut into a neck breaker. Both of them, like, pretty much standard moves, should not get a finish. And now, as much as I was, you know, excited for the debut of your Puerto Rican brethren over here, they're going to come through with, like, a leg sweep and a barrel roll kick as a finisher. It's like, these are fine, signature moves for a team. It's good tag team work. I don't mind that at all. Okay, but you shouldn't be getting a finish off it. And then the bigger problem is the longer they use a finish like that, when you start putting them into matches with guys that have any kind of cachet, there's no way that anyone's going to believe. I mean, they can do four of those in a match, and you know that's not going to be a finish.
Well, it's funny. Like, you look at Doc and Gallows with their tag team matches, and they're throwing finishers out their ass. I mean, like, great finishers that you know.
Like the Samoan drop hold with the shotgun kick?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, that's a great move, right? Mm-hmm. The problem with Serpico and Epico is that their finisher is more for like a martial artist type base wrestler, right? If you have two skinny Asian guys doing that, it's a way more effective than like two kind of mid-sized guys doing it.
Even that's not a finish unless it's a finish in a cruiserweight tag team match.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? And the funny thing is with
with that group is that I think, I don't remember their finish as the Los Matadors, but it was a decent finish. And the whole thing is like their headbutts were great. Like those flying headbutts they used to do. I'm like, dude, I'm like, mm-hmm. I want to see those because that was a fun match when they were doing that. Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, you're talking about the VOD villains and stuff. And it's kind of, I don't know if, I'm not saying that their finish is like, that's like their, the allure to that tag team, but that is a pretty weak finish.
That's probably why you like it so much.
Well, I mean, and I'm not saying it works for them because it doesn't work for them. I think that's the one thing they need to fix. And yeah, the Epico, Serpico, like Primo and Epico. Primo and Epico. I thought they had a fun match, but then when I see the finish, I'm going like, dude, like, what the hell is that, dude? You know?
Yeah, and I mean, you used to never see. I've never seen that kind of like finishers for tag teams before, and now, like, I don't know, it's like three teams within the last year and a half completely weak. And it's like there used to be like only a handful of really good like tag team finishers, right? There was like the Road Warriors, there was Demolition,
Doomsday Device,
yeah, and then there was the Heart Foundation Heart Attack,
yeah,
and like that was kind of it, I want to say, for like actual like double team tag team finishes. But then, like, somewhere along the way, like, I think they lost, like, you know, even you know, the Brainbusters, right? The just bringing out something
as simple as a spike power driver,
right? Yeah. Like, that was great. And you look at your boys that the Revival that are, like, kind of the second coming of the Brainbusters. They got a great tag team finisher. Have you seen, you know what their thing is?
Now you're making them look like an idiot, but.
It's like.
I've seen it. I don't remember it.
Right. Okay. But, I mean, that's good. And even he was just trying to stay woke.
Yeah.
Even American Alpha with like Jason Jordan like throwing the guy up and then Gable putting him into the bridging back soup, the German suplex like for the pin.
Even the Young Stallions doing the double elbow drop off the top rope. Right?
Yeah, like that worked, right? Like all those things work. They're creative. I can buy that finish.
What was the Outsiders' finish? They just had one individual finishers.
Yeah. But yeah, like I don't know why they want to come through with teams that you know they're supposed to be tag team. None of these guys, like neither one of those VOD villains guys, is going to break out and be a singles star. I'll pretty much guarantee that right now. So and I think Epico and Serpico, it's already established. Like if they're going to ever get anything, it's going to be as a tag team. You come out with a legitimate finisher for your team.
Well, I think the thing that's hurting the legitimate finishers is that for a lot of these guys. They have to rush their matches because they don't get the time to do it. And I think if you're in a mode where you're rushing your match and you know you got to get a finisher in, and it, say even if it's like, say, like a cutter type combo, right? I mean, I think it's a case where you're a lot more open to making a mistake and injuring someone. So I think these are safe finishes where. You want to do a 20-minute match, but you have to do it in 8 minutes. And I think if you're rushing around and trying to get all your stuff in, and you're trying to get your finisher in, especially with the way the WWE style is right now, is because you're like the last like 2 minutes of the match, you're gonna have like a big flurry of moves. Mm-hmm. And I think if you get a case where you start throwing in like neck breakers and what anything that involves the head, I think you're more apt to make a mistake and injure someone and put them on a shelf for a long time.
Yeah, but that doesn't. I mean, but to go against that point, that's exactly what the VOD villain's finisher is. It's a neck breaker.
You're asking me, it's not like a cutter, right? Like I'm talking more about a cutter. Okay. You know, like a cutter. You know, if some guy's holding some guy up and you put on a cutter, you know that's more of like a case. Even if it's like a back neck cutter, you're more open to hurting someone.
I guess, but I mean,
you're asking me a question. I think that I'm trying to give you an answer.
Right? No, yeah. I hear you. No, I just. Well, like, because that's, I mean, I'd say that was more like, you know, that's the Dudley's finish, right? Which, and there's another good tag double team move.
But that's a pretty safe move.
Right. But it's still exactly what you're saying.
But
it's,
no, like, no, it's an elevated cutter. I'm talking about more, so, I mean, what I'm saying is that you have these guys that are very athletic, and I think that their athleticism kind of fails them a little bit because they can do a lot more than the Dudley's can. Like, if you can picture the VOD villains like doing like that type of move and putting their own spin on it, you know, I think it's more you open yourself more to like getting the other person in, you know, and
but even like you mentioned before when we first brought it up, the Matador's finish, right? Wasn't it? It was something where they did like a double arm ringer, and then they lifted the guy up, and they both threw him on his back.
Yeah,
that's a finish. Let him do that still.
Yeah,
like there's no reason to switch off of that to go this leg sweep trash.
Yeah,
so it's a bad trend, and I hope that they don't try to put any more really weak finishers out there like that with any of the upcoming tag teams. I just want to throw it out there as every once in a while we go to our moves that we see or spots that we don't like. So that's a trend in spots that I'm saying I don't like it, and I hope that it does not continue.
Well, it's funny because there hasn't really been like finishers for tag teams. I mean, because the whole thing is like, you had the New Day for a long time, and they really don't win off a finish. They win, you know, they win through like finagling the referee and stuff.
But they did have I thought they were very effective in turning the big ending into a double team finish with Kofi with the DDT.
Yeah.
I think because I think a lot of people are sketchy on the big ending anyway. I was kind of, especially in the beginning, but adding Kofi with the DDT, I think makes that a legitimate finish.
All right. Move skill number 146. Anything else?
Let me see.
You want us to do like the hack job and do like the Mount Rushmore of wrestlers and stuff?
Don't go Dan Dibley on me, dude.
Dan Dibley.
Let's see. I'm trying not to look at the ceiling. I'm trying to think if there's anything more. Oh wait, what do you got here?
All right, I'm just gonna do a Golden Mike.
Okay.
And then I think we go into Game of Thrones.
Okay, this is what I want to.
We can talk about Charlotte Sassigan if you want.
No. Real quickly, okay, you're going to have to tell me if we've inducted this guy. If not, then I want to go ahead and do it now. I know we've inducted a couple of broadcasters. I know we inducted Jesse.
We can't induct Ronaldo. Not yet.
I know we inducted Jesse, but I do not recall if we had ever got around to inducting the Brain.
I think we did.
Did we induct the Brain?
Yeah.
All right. I was just like, you know, the last couple of weeks, I think he was in the hospital for a bit and out. And you know, kind of thought about how, like, last time we had an induction, it was China. And, you know, I think that's something that we probably should have done a while ago and not had to, like, wait until she died to kind of remember, like, the contributions. So I was just thinking about the Brain and thinking, like, hadn't inducted the Brain.
We inducted so many people. I don't know if we inducted the Brain.
Right. I don't remember that.
I mean, you have a better memory with that stuff than
I do. Right. I want to say we didn't, because I want to say that the way I remember it is, in my mind, it was a coin toss whether I wanted to induct Jesse or induct Bobby when we did Jesse.
Back when we had enough people to do it, right?
Yeah, and then I know I inducted Jesse, and then I think I tabled inducting the Brain.
Let's go ahead and talk about Bobby the Brain.
So, what can you say about Bobby Heenan?
Been said
before. Yeah, dude's hilarious on the mic, was a great broadcaster, was the first guy that was ever consistently calling out Hulk Hogan as being like a shady character.
And he was right.
Yeah. And that was kind of the funny thing about it, because everyone just always just completely brushed aside. You know, Hulk Hogan was beyond reproach, as Jim Harbaugh would like to say. And then Bobby was the only guy, and he was the weasel. He was the guy that was always lying. And then it turned out, like, the longest standing shtick of his career ended up being like the dead on balls accurate truth about Hulk Hogan. And he was always funny when he was ripping him. He would play the fool and look really good doing it in a lot of cases. Great manager. Back when, like, managers were kind of in their heyday, and like, in terms of like getting distractions, getting heat for guys, putting a stable together, and then him being the mouthpiece for guys that, you know, probably weren't the best promo guys in their day. Always entertaining. I just one of the reasons that I think we both just enjoyed watching wrestling was like, and I don't even know if we realized it at the time. I know we liked Bobby Heenan, but I don't know that we knew how much like he added to the enjoyment of watching the show as a, because I think there was a lot of good broadcasters back then. And then as we got older, good broadcasters kind of got more sparse. And I think even more so now, looking and like, you know, getting some of the broadcasting that we've gotten, makes you appreciate even more what Bobby Heenan did on the mic.
But he's one of those guys where he was the heel announcer, but he wasn't the heel announcer, right? Like, he didn't try to do stuff to be a heel announcer. He was just who he was. He was believable, right? And that's kind of like the whole thing. Like, I think the King, when he was with JR in the beginning, you knew he was forcing it, but his shtick was so... I mean, after a while, like, his shtick became so, like, bad.
You're talking about Kings, right?
About Kings, yeah. Then all of a sudden, like, you bought into what the King was doing because you accepted him as being, like, kind of an idiot announcer. He was, like... As Bobby Brain was a heel announcer, the King was an idiot announcer. And you bought into it, and that's what made the King enjoyable for a certain amount of time. Bobby was always good, and he could work with anybody. I mean, and I think that shows, right? Like, I mean, he was gold. He was like the perfect foil for Gorilla Monsoon, and I think he made Gorilla Monsoon better. Then he had to work with Tony Schiavone, and poor Brain for having worked with Tony Schiavone. But that, you know, WCW does not take off without the announcement of Bobby the Brain Heenan,
and he could just sit there picking on Schiavone and pointing out how much of a goof Schiavone was, and that made. That almost made listening to Schiavone tolerable, right? Like, the fact that Bobby Heenan just kept calling him out for being stupid.
Well, what I used to like that, you know, so they would have, like, I think Tuesday night, or it was on USA, it was either like a Tuesday or Thursday night.
Thunder?
No, it wasn't a Thunder. It was USA, it was for WWE. Mm-hmm. And they had, like, kind of like, it was like a highlight show where it was like an hour long, and they would go and show matches, like house matches and stuff. But Bobby at the end would, like, he'd had his pen, and he'd be writing, you know, Gorilla's writing stuff down, you know, Gorilla's saying stuff, and Bobby's writing stuff down with his pen. And then he'd do, like, this thing with his pen, like, just kind of, like, sign it off or something like that. It was just, like, small little things like that. And, you know, some of his, like, classics was, he is, like, he is so good in the Royal Rumble that Ric Flair won. Because, you know, he was kind of backing Ric Flair. And I mean, he was so classic in that, right? Like, when Ric Flair comes out, he's like, oh no, you know, he's just like, you know, and Gorilla was like, just bad, right? I mean, kind of same thing. He was bad, but he was good. He's like, there's your number one guy, and now he's coming in number two, and this, that, and this. And Bobby's like having a big, you know, crisis. And then it was a case where Roddy Piper comes out and stuff. And he's like, he's wearing a skirt. And then he started like helping out Ric Flair. And then he, you know, after they threw someone out, Roddy Piper would turn on Ric Flair. He's all, it's not a kilt, it's a skirt. It's not a kilt, it's a skirt. Just those little stuff like that. And then, of course, the classic one where Ravishing Rick Rude and the NWO, like, took over the announce booth. And I think he was with Mr. Perfect. And Bobby was like, ha, ha, hi, Mr. Rude.
Hello, Bobby.
Yeah, so just... It was natural to him, and the thing about Bobby the Brain was that his best work you never saw, because his best work was like an AWA, and nobody's ever seen that type of work as a manager or as an announcer. I mean he's an institution in wrestling, right? It's like we don't become as big of wrestling fans as we do without Jesse the Body, without Bobby the Brain, and without Gorilla Monsoon at the same time. I mean, like they were like our like gateway drug into wrestling, just like listening to these guys talk. And Bobby the Brain was like the total heel announcer, but I remember even way back when, like, listening to him, I never disliked the guy. Mm-hmm. It's like I knew he was entertainment, and he was saying like these outlandish things, but I was like, it's pretty cool that this guy has enough, like, you know, he can say this because he's Bobby the Brain, and it's okay.
Yeah, I think what you said, saying outlandish things, like, it was like he had the ability to say outlandish things and then, like, either, like, sell it, like he was taking it seriously, and then go around and then immediately contradict what he said 30 seconds ago, and like, you still liked it. And that was, I don't know, that was one of the many talents that Bobby the Brain Heenan had. So hopefully everything's going well for the Brain. And, If we didn't induct him earlier, then we should have.
I don't think we did, because
if so,
I would remember the great stuff that I just said.
Right. Yeah, yes, so it was great. So so hopefully everything's good for the Brain, and there you go, Hall of Kayfabe, Bobby Heenan.
All right, that's a good
point. Hello, Bobby.
So let's go, Golden Mike, and let's do it.
Let's do this while I wait for my my stupid network to get on. And then we wait. And oh, I got an advertisement. Oh my god, dude, terrible. So you can hear. So how you doing? Hey, how's it going there? Hey,
I'm good. I'm good.
How's your day, dude? Yeah,
day was it was all right.
Some this girl gawking at the rock over here. Okay, here we go.
Mother.
No, it's all right. It's a logical question. Ours is a new love, but it burns very brightly. And it gets hot and sweaty and stanky. There's some stank on that love.
What are you talking about?
Let's put it this way. I'd be busting nuts like a squirrel.
Oh, no, we don't have conversations like that over dinner.
What are you doing? I'm undressing the white elephant in the room. I'm breaking down the barriers of race by assimilation. And that's all I'm doing.
You're coming off like a jerk.
I think it's going well.
If you haven't noticed, we don't progress like that.
Okay. Look at Big Papa down here. He's saying to himself, shit, look at this honky sitting at my table eating my food in my house, touching my daughter. I have touched your daughter.
Honey.
We have done things, Papa. You ain't gonna like it none.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I'm just a guy from Terre Haute, Indiana. With a big old dick and a fat wallet and a spleef the size of a baby arm, just looking for someone who wants to smoke it. Let's get some smoke going in this place, right?
This ain't no super fly. What is your problem, man?
Linda, I don't understand what you are doing with him.
Oh, you know what I'm coming at you with, you big black mother of Linda. Mix it up in a pot, making it spicy.
Oh, my Lord.
Hey, in the back, cooking up chitlins, big old titties. Big old titties.
Excuse me?
That's my mama, man. Hey, wave your hands in the air. Wave your hands in the air like you just don't care.
Please don't do this.
Now, which one of you pipe-hitting bitches can pass me?
Oh, that's me.
Well, I don't think that dinner could have gone any better.
I don't know where you want me to go with that, man. That was highly offensive to a lot of people, I'm sure. But it's pretty funny.
That's it?
I mean that's the golden mic, I take it.
Yes.
It was a hell of a heel promo, I guess. I don't even know what to say. Ron Burgundy strikes again.
Well, that was like the other version. There's like another version where he talks about like how he walks around the office looking fly. And he went straight up to that honky boss man and said, Hey boss man, you got to pay me. You got to pay me in paper.
I think I've heard that version. That's the one in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a pretty funny scene.
That's the only good scene in like in Anchorman 2.
Yeah. Yes. Anchorman 1 I strongly recommend. But yes, that yeah, I don't know, man.
I just had to bring it up.
it's funny.
That's my mom, man.
I just got this big spleef the size of a baby arm looking for someone to smoke it.
Alright, so do you want to get into Game of Thrones real fast or call it a day?
No, go.
So you've been like, you know, so this whole thing with Jon Snow, right? About saying how like, you know, like you've been talking about it for a while and saying like how he died and he came back, and then that means he does no longer has to be part of the Night's Watch. I mean, you called that out like a year ago, dude. So like everything like you're saying is like coming to fruition. So I got to commend you on that. Usually, like you come out with stuff that really doesn't make any sense. Like I remember you said that when the Phantom Menace was coming out, you said that Obi-Wan was a clone. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi was because Obi-Wan, you know, he's a clone. I was like, I don't know about that, dude. But this one, you're
man,
like,
that's a long time ago.
Hey, man. Just call me an elephant, dude. Could be. Wyatt, I'm an oak.
I'm not gonna deny that I said something like that. And it's funny because I remember when I said that, I think even a couple of weeks ago, and I think you were saying like that wasn't gonna happen, and I was like, okay, I guess that's not gonna happen.
Okay.
and then when he did, I was like, hey, good. Yeah. I thought that was a really good episode. I thought, like, a lot of the good stuff happened. It took like several storylines and advanced them quite a bit. the show, it keeps.
Don't tell me. I mean, you gotta tell me like when John finally meets up with
Sansa.
Sansa, like it touched your heart just a little bit.
That's what I was about to say. Like, it keeps its streak going in taking characters that I didn't care about and like starting to make me like them. And I actually, for the first time ever on this show, like I actually started to care about Sansa. I'm just happy that Snow finally got to see a member of his family again. And like, I liked how she kind of like, she kind of showed some humility to Jon Snow for the first time. And he still tried to be humble about it, but she's like, no, you know, basically I was a bitch. And he's like, okay, fine. Like,
yeah.
Well,
I think even like the more compelling thing is that like she wants to fight and Jon Snow doesn't.
Right.
And he agrees, but you can tell he's agreeing reluctantly. Like right. the fight's been taken out of Jon Snow, which right. is something that, you know, is a new direction for this guy too. It's like, dude, like Jon Snow, stop being such a bitch, dude. You know, like you have a second chance at life, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad it seems like it was only for part of an episode, but there was like an element to like woe is me, Jon Snow. Oh, my brother's turned against me.
I think when he agrees, you know, Sansa says like we got to fight, and he agrees.
Yeah.
I don't think his heart's not in it, right? I mean, that's the way I took it. I took it as like he really doesn't. He just kind of agreed because he had to. But I think, you know, that there's some questionable things of Jon Snow's character, whether he was the guy that he was before or he becomes more of kind of like a beaten dog.
I say by the time he gets to Winterfell, he's ready.
But
to
rock and roll. I don't want to see that. You know, it's like I want to see the old Jon Snow, right? It's like I don't want to see a doubting Jon Snow,
right,
or
right.
a brooding Jon Snow,
right? Well, I could take brooding. I just don't want to see whining.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think that he's gonna be that. I think he had a short period. I will grant him. You know, he did die, so I'll grant him a little bit of a time period of like, well, what am I gonna do now? But I think that he needs a purpose, and that's a good purpose.
I don't think his heart's in it. You know, that's what I took from that whole kind of scene that, you know, where they're all at the table talking about it. Right now, like I want to believe that his heart's in, but right now I think he's kind of like a reluctant person, and I think, you know, he's kind of Sansa's kind of, and it's kind of funny because Sansa's kind of, I think this is a case where Sansa can start becoming a strong leader. Or a strong person, this is her opportunity to do that. But I mean, when he agrees to Sansa, it's half-hearted. I mean, that's the way that I took it. So stepping into something else, you know, all Tyrionism aside, which was, I mean, Tyrion right now, like this season is just like badass, right? Like, I don't want to get into what he does and stuff because it's typical Tyrion, and it's glad to kind of see him in that King's Hand role again because that's when I, you know. I really liked in the books that I really liked it when he was King's Hand back then because it just showed like
all of his politics,
all of his machinations and stuff, and it was successful. So he's in his element right now. But somewhere down the line, people forgot that that the Khaleesi is a flipping badass, dude, and it is nice to see her kind of return to form because people kind of forget, you know, like she escaped that pyramid, you know, the dragons. She like. Her dragons like burned everybody, mm-hmm. you know, and you know the probably one of the best scenes was when she makes a deal with the masters and she's like, well, you know, dragons can't be owned, and the dragons go crazy and the Unsullied like go roughshod over mm-hmm. Yun Kai or whatever it was, and she goes back to I want to say like Doth something, whatever that land is, but she burns everybody up, right? And I'm going like, dude, I'm like, that's the girl that I like. That's the queen of the Andals that I like, right? Mm-hmm. And then of course, you know, you got your little kind of stuff at the end when she walks out naked and stuff. And
I'm hearing that's a body double.
Whatever. we saw the real thing in the first episode, so I don't care.
Right. Yes.
She gets a pass.
Okay.
I'll make a pass at her, but she gets a pass.
I like, I think with her it's kind of like, the things that she's done are so unbelievable within the context of that world that, like, we've seen them, so we know what she is and what she can be. But every time she encounters new groups of people, like, they've heard stories, but they're not going to... I wouldn't believe that story, you know? And so every once in a while, she has to have that moment where she reminds everybody, you know, do you know who the hell I am, right? And this was that moment of the season. So I'm very curious because it's like, how many times has she acquired these armies, right? She's got massive amounts of people behind her, it would seem. But she can never get that army moving to where she needs to go in King's Landing. So I like it. And I think it's kind of fulfilling. It's almost like she's going to like fulfill this destiny of when she married Khal Drogo to bring this Dothraki army across the sea. But I want to, when is that actually going to happen? Like, when is she going to start making some progress of getting these armies that she has going towards King's Landing? So I feel like maybe this season is not going to be the big war or anything, but I think maybe they'll get some forward movement into that army getting towards King's Landing, and maybe the walkers moving south. And I think like the chess pieces seem to be moving into place for some big war to happen within maybe another season or two.
We'll see. So to get all book nerd on you is that, so the new book that's supposed to come out, which I don't think is ever going to come out, there's two big battle scenes in that book, and I don't know what the battle scenes are, and there's certain things that have progressed a lot faster in the TV series than it has in the book. The way I look at her character is, I think she's, instead of like her coming in as like a usurper, you know, coming in real fast and taking over the throne, and then it's like, okay, well, what does she do now? And, she's not ready to lead this, that, and this. I think this is where she's getting her experience as a leader, right? Like, I mean, because she wants to keep everybody free. She doesn't like slavery, this, that, and this. And so she kind of gets off track in terms of what her real end game is in mind. So, yeah, I don't think it's not. I mean, this is a long time coming. I especially with the whole Jon Snow stuff that's going on, because it's moved a lot faster. Like right now, like Stannis is still alive in the books, and they're marching to face the Boltons. I don't even know what's going to happen with Winterfell, right? So it's kind of like I've always kind of felt that Snow and her are going to like be like king and queen of all Westeros. That's what I've always kind of felt. And I don't know what it is now, and I don't know what's going to happen, but with the way Snow's progressed in terms of like he's brought back to life. He's not kind of like an undead guy. He's like back to life again. And there's kind of like within the books, there's someone else that got brought back to life, and I don't want to spoil it for you, but so there's all these kind of questions that are going on. So it's crazy right now.
Yeah. But I thought, yeah, the show was really good.
And we have to give a rest in peace to the Wildling girl that died. That came out. I was like, wow, that's a fast way to kill off that character.
Yeah. Yeah. They've had her in there for a while as this ancillary character. And then, yeah. But it kind of goes back to, and she's not like a major character, but it goes back to anybody can die at any time. And, yeah, she was cool enough. I kind of liked her as it went on. Worried about Rickon a little bit. Yeah. And so, I think that ultimately all of those things, I don't think that, Jon Snow will have any problem finding the switch that he needs to flip, to hopefully, I want to see that guy do Ramsay Bolton in, man. That's what I want to see.
You've been waiting. Well, just as much as anybody can die, I think any fan can be disappointed. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that'd be like the ultimate disappointment if like Ramsay kills Jon Snow.
You're like, what? you're like, man.
What the fuck?
You turn it off the TV. I'm out of here.
Kill Jon Snow. It's 91. Caught your crew. What the fuck?
Like, hey, your boy Jon Snow got popped. What?
What?
All right. So we just got number 146. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for waiting for us. I got my boy, Better Have My Donuts over here. He is going to promote the link on Twitter, because when he does it, he gets a lot more people to kind of chime in and follow it. I gave the tweet like 2 weeks ago. You never tweeted it, dude. You're lazy, man. You're lazy. Musco number 46. And we're good.
Yow.
To go. All right. Pipe.
superhero from the hood. Iron Man stars got the good, not that good, good like Snoop. I bulletproof the coop, polished up the suit and gather the troops. Got a brand new ray gun. Me and Doom headed down to the range, shooting the matrix. Catch bullets with my hands and teeth, I break faces. Wild cop chases, dawn of all ages. I saved the world, that's fucking history pages. My Wu Crescent shines in the sky at night. Watch out, my eagle on my wrist, take off, it's a fight. All my might.